Johnson, and I'm here with Steph Walton. And it's Wednesday, the 26th of April. So, hey, Stephanie, what's going on?
Hey, Kimberly. Oh, man, a lot's going on.
Yeah?
It's, you know, it's spring. The weather's changing, and that's not a climate change comment. I always get this great feeling this time of year, kind of like, okay, without sounding like a goober, it's like, all right, fresh start. You know, we began 2017, all of us with our heads hung low, and, here we are a quarter of the way through the year. And I feel really, I don't know, strangely optimistic.
That's good. I don't.
Certain things.
I'm like the crack of doom now.
Right. Jesus.
I'm going to try to laugh about it, though. But you know what I was thinking? I'm sure you're aware of Chicks on the Right, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Unfortunately.
I think we're like sluts on the left.
And emphasis on sluts. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I mean, why not? Why not? And I'm proud to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so stupid. The term, you know, I would have used the term slut, I guess, prior to my whole introduction to the, well, you know, in 2012 when I was the Rock the Slut vote spokeswoman.
But you accidentally just said ho.
I know, huh? It's like, I just anyway, can't get away from it. You know, but if I were to use that term, it would have just been for a woman that pissed me off. Obviously, it would have been a woman that maybe would have hit on my boyfriend or something like that. And I would have used it in a way that was derogatory. But I never really thought of, I mean, I never looked at women and thought if they enjoyed sex that they were sluts or... you know, I mean, my mother was a feminist single mother who went out with men, and I know she had sex with men, and it's not like she, you know, did it in front of me or anything like that, but both of my parents went out with people and I knew they were having sex. And so it wasn't like, I don't know, there was not this slut shaming thing in my household. So, but now that I am an official slut and I realize that, I there is really no such thing as a slut. It's just a word meant to shame.
It totally is a word meant to shame. Now, I grew up in a house where with two devout Catholic parents who I wasn't having sex talks with my dad.
Yeah.
But my
well, actually,
mother,
neither was I.
Pardon?
No, I wasn't with my dad either.
No, come on. I had boyfriends and he knew that in high school, and I was very into boys from a really young age and attracted to them, wanted to be with them, that kind of thing. Like it was, there was definitely when the time came and after, you know, I was through with puberty, I wanted to have sex with them. And I knew things like, well, you don't want to do that too soon, or you need to wait a long time, or so-and-so was like bragging about how she'd been with this jock for 6 months and they hadn't even, you know, she hadn't even given him a blow job yet. And I'm like, holy Christ, I got to wait till the third date to make myself feel like I'm, you know, all my clothes are off in the back of the car. I wanted to,
yeah,
you know, and I felt terrible about it.
And I'm
embracing the term slut as you are now, because that's female empowerment. I enjoy sex. I am going to have it. Therefore, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing to apologize about liking sex. And I get so sick and tired of people, especially on social media, who say things like, you know, whenever the topic of abortion comes up, they say something about keeping your legs closed or whatever. It's like, yeah, that's not even reality.
That's the stupidest thing I could ever hear a person say.
I mean, it's just never going to happen. It's just a dumb argument that goes nowhere. I'm so sick and tired of people using the argument, this is how you should behave. Because it's like, okay, is that how people really behave? No. So stop telling us what we should do and focus on, okay, here's reality. Let's come up with a solution in reality, you know? right. Whatever.
Like, how about it's none of your goddamn business if I'm going to have an abortion, for starters, but keeping my legs closed and you telling me that's what I should do,
right,
is, I mean, I hate that word should.
Me too.
Anyway, because it's just, it already implies regret or that something was done incorrectly, you know?
Yeah.
And anyhow, yeah, the whole telling me how I should behave, or I'm sorry, you know, I remember I had broken up with a long-term boyfriend, and I have this lovely friend who's a few years older than me. And I leaned on her after the breakup because it was heartbreaking. And she said, you know, you're going to be fine. Get yourself back out there when you're ready and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, yeah. So when I was ready, I'm out and I'm dating. And if I liked the guy, well then, you know, I wanted to try it out. And I remember her telling me, no, you cannot have sex with him on this date. It's only your second date. There's a 5-date rule. A 5-date rule.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, and then I have guy friends who are like, oh, forget it. If I'm having a great night with a woman and it's our first date and we don't have sex, I'm not going to ask her out again.
Yeah.
You know,
well, do you ever read that book, The Rules?
Oh, I was just going to bring it up. I hate that fucking book.
I know. Me too.
Someone gave me that book. Get a load of this. After that breakup that I was just talking about, I had I have a very good guy friend who's a dear friend to this very day. And we sat in cubes next to each other, and I was down and I told him, and he's like, God, you know, you bounce right back. Don't worry about it. So I start dating, and his wife at the time, ex now, thank God, gave him a copy of The Rules wrapped up in like it was a gift for me. And he goes, yeah, she wanted me to give this to you. And I opened it up and I was like, oh, I'm going to burn this thing. And she was dead to me from that moment forward.
Yeah. I read The Rules and I thought it was such a crock of shit. And mainly a lot of it is because it's the idea that you taunt and tease. You know, you get this person to chase you.
Yes.
And then unless they really love you, once they catch you, once they finally catch you, then they're done. The hunt is over.
Right.
And if a man loves you, he loves you. It doesn't matter. And, you know, I mean, there have been people that I've known, like a girlfriend of mine, had sex with her husband, now husband, on the first date. And I remember she was agonizing about that. Like, oh my God, did I make the right choice? Did I do the right thing? And the truth of the matter is, if a man and a woman go out and there's real chemistry and sex happens, if he's not a judgmental dickhead, then he's never going to care if you gave it up on the first date.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and the way that I look at it is I don't, that's not usually what I want to do, because for me, I like to, it's not about morals or what they're going to think of me. It's about what I'm ready. Am I ready to be intimate with this person?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was a couple of times where I messed around with people, and actually, here's a funny story. I don't remember if I've ever told this on this show, but there was this misogynist, although he's not hardcore misogynist, but he's still misogynist, Italian guy that I met when I was in my early 20s. And I met him at a party, and he was really cute, and we, you know, started a conversation, and there was chemistry and flirtation. So I wound up driving him home, and it was really late. It was, I think it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and he asked me into his apartment, and I really liked him, and I didn't want the night to end. And I remember thinking that maybe I shouldn't do this, but okay, I'll go do it. So I went into his apartment, and we were talking. I don't remember if we had any alcohol. I don't really think we did. But it occurred to me at that moment that what if I, you know, it's clear he thinks we're going to have sex now because I came into his apartment so late. And so what if I, this is so dumb. Everyone says I'm so dumb for thinking this. And I also say I'm so dumb. But anyway, I thought to myself, what if I try to leave and he rapes me?
What? That's not dumb.
Well, but I mean, this, no, that's not the dumb part. So, so then I just decided, cause of course then he, you know, he started kissing me, and this thought is in my head more and more. And I thought, well, what if he tries to rape me? I'm going to be fucking scarred for life. So I'll just have sex with him, because if I have sex with him, then it's not rape and I won't be scarred for life. So I had sex with him. And it was okay. I mean, I remember kind of enjoying it. I mean, I was really young. I think I was like 21, maybe 22. And so anyway, then he called me up for a second date. And we went out, and it was funny because we went out to this restaurant and freaking Rob Reiner was there, and Rob Reiner was staring at me the whole time. And I remember thinking, like, I was just a budding actress at the time, and I was thinking, please discover me, but he never did. So anyway, I said to this guy that, you know, well, I did give it up for you on the first date, but don't think that's going to happen again. And he was like, yeah, right. And then we wound up back at his apartment. We had sex again. And then I realized I didn't even really like him. I mean, he was cute and he was nice, but he just wasn't for me.
You were just preventing a rape from happening.
Yeah, that's what I thought anyway. And it's so funny because I went out with him a third time, and then it was just clear I wasn't interested. So I lied to him and I told him that that my ex-boyfriend and I got back together. So cut to, this was, God, you know, like 1990, cut to 2009, 2010, I moved up to Northern California, and lo and behold, I Googled his name, and he lived in Northern California. So we became Facebook friends, and I don't really think he remembered me. So he would, like, send me some emails occasionally, or Facebook messages, and he would kind of try to be flirty or whatever, but he wasn't very good at it, and he was kind of like a sexist. And so I would just give it right back to him, and he didn't know how to take it. So eventually he sends me some message and I send it back, and he suggested that we go out to dinner. So we talked on the phone, and I reminded him of what happened, and he didn't really have, he had a little bit of a memory of it, but he didn't remember much of it. So I let him know. I said, look, we can go out to dinner, but it's not going to be a repeat of when I was 21.
Yeah, right.
So we go out to dinner and we have a lovely time. It was nice. And so then, and he's like staring at my cleavage the whole time. And he asked me if I wanted to go back to his place. And I said, no. So, I go home, he goes home. We have, you know, now he lived probably about 50 miles away from me. So he really couldn't be bothered to drive up to where I live to pick me up. So he kept trying to convince me to come spend the night at his house. And he had this extra guest room and that we didn't have to have sex. And I was like, yeah, right. So
bullshit.
I know. So he kept asking me and I kept telling him, no, I'm like, if you want to go out with me, you can come up here and take me out to dinner. So he had a bit of a thick accent. I remember he says, I'm not going to beg. And I just started laughing and I'm like, good. And then that was it. And I never heard from him again. And then he defriended me on Facebook.
I'm not gonna bag it, Kimberly.
It was so funny, and it was like, whatever. But
I'm not gonna buy you dinner, and I'm not gonna drive it to pick you up either, huh?
But I hope that you're gonna suck on my dick.
My hand is doing that thing, you know, with the, hey, yeah. Yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is, back in those days when we were young and kind of dumb, you know,
yeah,
and put ourselves in situations when, like, you know, we could have been taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And to be a 21 or a 22 or a 28 or a 35-year-old woman, for that matter, or a 50-year-old woman who's in a situation where she feels she has to mm-hmm. have sex with the man because she's afraid he might just take it from her.
Yeah.
Or because she feels she owes it to him, is insane.
It is. And that is the definition of rape culture.
It is. And we, you know, our generation, Kimberly, you know, yours was different. Your mom, you had more of an empowered view, and I had more of a just built-in guilt view. And it took me many decades to get to the point where it was like, no, you know what? I'm in control of the situation. If this is somebody that I want to be with or I want to sleep with, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And if it's, you know, with my husband, oh, I wanted to, like, do him the second I laid eyes on him. But we took a little time to get to know each other sort of very casually. And then we went out on our first date, and the situation didn't present itself, which is probably a good thing, because I for sure would have. And then the second date, I just decided, you know what, I'm going to take some time. It didn't feel right to me, you know? And I wanted to take some time to see what it was like just to have a conversation with this guy sober and, you know, check him out.
Yeah.
And then on the third one, it was, you know, all systems go. and then we spent 42 nights together. Wow. In a row, which of course would every single night we had. Yeah. Sex of those 42.
Wow.
And then on day 43, we kind of looked at each other and I'm like, okay, so you're going to go back to your place tonight? It was just time. It was time and it was good. And then it was healthy, you know?
Right.
And he, believe me, he was into me and I was into him. We could have done it right there on the sidewalk in front of his apartment the first night we were together saying goodnight.
Yeah.
But because like you said, that was there. I wasn't, there were no games being played. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first relationships where I had, you know, I was in my 30s. I had already been married and divorced and there were no games. And yeah. That's how it should be.
It is. In fact, there was that book, by Greg somebody or other, but He's Just Not That Into You. I don't know if you ever read that book, but I ran out and bought it. He was one of the writers for Sex and the City.
Right.
And they did an episode actually based on that. And it's very true. You know, it's like when the man likes you, there's no questions. Men are fairly simple when it comes to this issue. And they, you know, it's funny because Bob and I are watching Men of a Certain Age right now. Have you ever seen that show?
No.
Oh, it's so awesome. It's great. It was from like 2009, 2010. And it's Ray Romano, Scott Bakula.
I love him. I love him.
Yeah. Ray Romano is a producer and I think a writer. And Scott Bakula and Andre Brower. And so they're all like three best friends and they're in their late 40s. And so they're kind of like, you know, you've got Andre Brower, who's the married man, and you've got Ray Romano, who's the divorced man. And then you've got the Scott Bakula character, who reminds me of so many men that I've gone out with. And he's like the artist who never wants to commit. And so like he even gave his friend Ray Romano advice, saying that when when you're starting to date a woman, that here's some simple, a simple phrase that you should put in your pocket. And we don't have to define anything right now. And it was so funny because at the time when I first was watching the show back in, you know, I think it was 2010, there was a man that I knew who closely resembled Scott Bakula's character. He was an earthy kind of artist. And that was his whole thing. You know, it's like, we're not going to make a commitment. And frankly, I think that he and I would have never been anything serious anyway. He was not in the mindset to have a commitment with anybody at that time. He and I were better friends than anything else. But we, you know, sometimes you get confused when you mess around and stuff. So anyway, it's a great show though, because it's an insight to the male psyche. But the whole point of this is that there was that book, He's Just Not That Into You, and Scott Bakula's character kind of highlights the man that isn't that into you. And women like to make excuses and say, oh, well, he's probably just busy, or we just don't know each other very well. No, if they like you, they like you. There's not a question.
Right.
It's just not, there's just never a question. And so, you know, I think that, but I look back, there was another occasion kind of similar. The Italian guy was the only time that I chose to have sex because I thought, well, it's better to do this than possibly get raped. Now that I know this guy, or found out a little bit more, I'm pretty sure he never would have raped me. He would have just maybe given me the sad face or something. Maybe I would have never heard from him again. I don't know. But, you know, and he was actually really sweet, because when I broke up with him, I broke up with him on the phone. We weren't really broken up, but we had only gone three dates. But I gave him the, you know, goodbye. And he told me, he called me. I said, you know, I'm getting together with my ex-boyfriend. And then I get a call from him like 6 months later, checking in. Like, oh, are you still with him? And I remember when we hung up, he said, ciao, Bella. And I thought, well, that was nice. You know, at least he was nice about it. He wasn't a jerk. But I don't know. I mean, there have been a couple times in my life where I decided to do things for stupid reasons. But yeah, I think that you're right. It's like, this is rape culture, and it's sad. It's sad that women feel this way.
It's sad. It's sad that it is also instilled at such a young age, in girls and in boys, that bad behavior on the part of boys and men is acceptable and should be tolerated by women and girls. And that's just not okay with me. It's not okay with my husband. I know, you know, we're very, I think we've talked about this before. I have a son who's turning 13, and, you know, you are going to, we say to him, you're going to start being intimate with girls. That's what he's interested in, is girls. And, it's gotta be something that you both want to do. And if at any point in your, you know, dealings with young women, you hear a no, or it just doesn't feel right to me, you back off and no questions asked.
Yeah.
Period. And he's like, I got it, Mom. And he knows that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, some people don't need to be told that. But I think in this day and age, it's a conversation that has to happen with young people, because it just perpetuates. I mean, think of all the times I was in so many terrifying situations when I was in college where I did the preemptive sex because I knew it was going to be forced on me.
Wow.
You know, and I have had it forced on me. And it was not something I wanted to do, but I gave in because I knew it could potentially go to a really awful place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't ever want my daughter to be in that situation. And I would, you know, certainly hope that my son is never in a situation like that too. But anyway,
well, you know, I want to
now
go ahead.
Sorry. Women are fucking tough. And it's because there are a lot of loudmouth bitches like you and me walking around that put it out there like, we are tough and we will not be taken advantage of. And you need my permission for that.
Yes.
Thank you. Right?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I don't want to spend too much of our time today talking about politics for a couple of reasons, because I'm just, you know, whatever you want to bring up as far as politics is fine. We can, you know, bring it up. I'm going to bring one thing up. And and I'm bringing this up for a couple of reasons. But the other day I was upset because I was under some wrong, I was misled, I guess I could say, because I guess it originated in the Wall Street Journal and then picked up by Washington Post that a candidate that Bernie Sanders is supporting, Heath Mello in Omaha, Nebraska, the misinformation was that he signed on to or co-sponsored a bill for transvaginal ultrasound probes. So I lost my fucking mind. And, you know, I know that this guy at this point in the game can't be primaried. It's him or the GOP. He's a pro-life guy who actually did vote on a 20-week abortion ban, among other things. But this whole transvaginal probe thing was wrong. He did not vote for that. So I lost my mind. And, you know, I was very defensive. I'm not going to apologize for, at least Hoag from NARAL was under the wrong impression. Rewire, which is a really good site for reproductive rights and justice, was also under this wrong impression. So, you know, we had the wrong information.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I had the wrong information. I tried to write the wrong on my Facebook page. But what I am sorry for is I'm sorry and I'm not sorry that I became hyper defensive when men would try to explain to me why it was still justifiable that this guy in the bigger picture, because I totally get that in the deep red states, it's not always going to be about the most progressive person. Sometimes you have to make a compromise. So my whole point is, why is it always fucking women? Why is it always women that have to be the compromise? We're the bargaining chip. We're the ones that we have to make. And it's like, I'm so sick of it. So I'm not going to say his name, but there is a gentleman. So if he's listening, and I will alert him to this, it starts with an R. He's a very nice man. And, you know, he commented actually on the thread that I posted when I admitted that I was under the wrong information. And I was a little harsh when, you know, when he kind of made the defense of why this guy should be up there. And I just was pissed. I wasn't pissed at this man. I was just, I'm sick and tired of hearing from men why women have to be put on the shelf. And although I do know that this particular man is a feminist and he's always very supportive of what I post and what I say, I think he's a great man. From what I can tell on Facebook. I mean, we don't know each other personally, but he's really cool. And I feel bad, you know, and it's not just for him. There was another guy that left my page because I, you know, I gave him sassy attitude. And so what I have to say, so the reason I say I'm sorry and I'm not sorry is, although I was misled and under the wrong impression, and I did kind of get on my soapbox and I railed, I kind of never going to apologize for that because I'm so tired of women having to put up with so much shit, whether it's from GOP guys or from liberal guys, because, you know, liberal men like to think that they're so more enlightened than everybody, but not all of them are. A lot of them are very sexist. And then they think they're not, but they are. And God forbid you bring it up and then they turn on you just the same way a conservative will. So, you know, if, I hate that you always have to add this, but obviously not all men. Obviously. There's plenty of men out there who are completely feminist and they understand and they're for women. And, you know, they don't get offended when they hear the term mansplainer, because splainer can be applied to anything. And there are mansplainers. I'm sure there's, you know, women's splainers and whatever. But men do it to women. It's a thing. There's a whole fucking book about it. So anyway, I'm going to say one more thing about this and then you can put in whatever you want. But the Bernie thing is bothering me now. And, you know, for everybody who knows me knows that I supported him for the primaries. And then when he lost, I put all of my support behind Hillary. The thing that I like about Bernie Sanders is that, number one, he's gotten a lot of people engaged in the political process. He woke a lot of, young people up, and he got a lot of people engaged in running and discussion and all kinds of things. The thing that I don't like is that he is taking this opportunity for unity and keeping the divide in our own party going, which makes it easier for anybody, whether it's Russians or GOP or whoever, who wants to put out fake news stories or bots or whatever to keep that divide going. It makes it easier to do that. Yeah. And, you know, reasonable people, otherwise normal, reasonable people, sometimes allow their emotions. And of course, it's not everyone, but allow their emotions to take over. And there was this one person who I actually knew personally, who hated Hillary Clinton so much that she posted this suggestion that Hillary Clinton had JFK Jr. murdered because he was, when his plane went down, it was her fault because he was like maybe going to run for Senate or something when she was in New York. And I told this person, that's ridiculous. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And this person got extremely defensive and so angry that I suggested that that was ridiculous. And I just think that this was a planted idea, and you get so emotionally involved in politics that you take a side and you just won't ever look at another side. And I totally agree with the idea that we should criticize or be critical of our own party when there are problems. Mm-hmm. And I get irritated with the Hillary side that doesn't ever want to hear a criticism. It's like, no, we have to face our criticisms.
Yeah, that's so true of the Hillary side, of which I am part.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm kind of on both sides.
And now I'm leaning more, but not to digress. Go right ahead.
But you know, it's like, but I don't like the way that Bernie is kind of holding everybody on his team out, like in a different, like we're different. I mean, whether you want to call it a purity test or true progressives, and, you know, as opposed to the establishment progressives, it's like, oh my God, I just say, take a cue from Elizabeth Warren. She pretty much has the same, she has the same economic message as Bernie does. And she pretty much has the same overall idea that while there are things in our party that need improvement, and it's perfectly fine to point out what needs to be improved, what's more important is to provide solutions so that we can all get behind those solutions. And she refuses to attack the Democratic Party. In her latest book, she doesn't go on about the primary. She doesn't go on about why she thinks Hillary lost. She's just looking forward and saying, okay, these are the things that we need to do. This is where we need to focus. And frankly, at this point in the game, I think she's got the best shot if she, you know, in 2020, although of course, obviously we need to focus on 2018, first, but when it does come time for 2020, she is kind of that person who's right in the middle of those two groups. I think she can be embraced by those two. And unless we have somebody new coming out, you know, who both would embrace, I think right now she's the best. But anyway, that's the end rant of my whole situation. I will always defend women's rights. I apologize for not completely getting the information right. And I apologize if I was a bitch to people who didn't deserve it. So there you go.
But you don't apologize for standing up for what women deserve and are entitled
right,
to.
Right, exactly. I never will.
No,
ever.
Me neither. And that would be the deciding factor. Like, I don't, you know, given that if I was from Omaha and I had to vote for that Mr. Mello, would I, based on that stance? The answer is no.
Well, compared to the conservative, though, I mean, would you rather have the conservative in?
See, now I have made a vow to myself for years that I would never vote for a Democratic candidate who didn't believe that a woman has a right to choose under any circumstances. And so I don't, you know, that I'm asking myself the question, you know, with you as my witness,
right.
I don't know. I don't know if I would have sat it out.
Well,
and that's so
I would.
Fucked up. That's
I would.
So fucked up. But I have, that is my, I mean, we've talked about this. I mean, my life, I wouldn't be sitting here with you right now, had I not had an abortion at, you know, the week before my 18th birthday. I'd be the mother of a 30 freaking 2 year old or whatever that math is. You know, I would have had a different experience. That's just something I'm not willing to compromise on.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a really tough
Well,
situation,
you know, Tim Kaine voted, I think, on, and I don't remember the exact legislation, but I guess in his career, he voted on some anti-abortion bills. I can't remember what it was. It might have had to do with partial birth or something like that. But, you know, in the end, he came around and he said, I recognize. And so did this guy. So did Mello. Mello came around and he says, okay, I'm not moving forward. I'm not doing this. And he was quite young when he made the decision. And he's Catholic. So it's like, well, if our tent, if our party is big tent,
yes,
you know, then we need to be able to allow evolved people in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, and I love, you know, one of my favorite things is when a politician or a person for that matter takes a stand and then changes it and goes the right way.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy to say good job, Heath and Tim and
Obama, because Obama was,
yes,
you know, came out for marriage equality.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Hillary did.
And Hillary. And, you know, so what I think what we need is people, whether they're progressive Democrats, you know, Hillary type Democrats or whatever, we need to get our shit together. And you know, I was just when you were talking about the us versus them sort of thing within our own party, you know, united we stand, divided we fall. Mm-hmm. We can't afford to be divided. We can't afford to continue this infighting, because look what we are living with right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I walked in to drop my kids off at school this morning, and I saw one of the administrators standing at the gate greeting everybody, and he looked sullen and crestfallen, really is more like it. Like, and I looked and I said, are you okay? And I walked over and he just said to me, North Korea. And I don't, we're not going to get too political, but I'm telling you, this is what people like us feel like on a daily basis. We walk through life. I mean, what's the first thing you do when you open your eyes in the morning? I'm asking you. Do you check Twitter?
You know what I actually do?
And yes,
it's getting a lot of bad, people are talking shit about it now, but I go to Raw Story because Raw Story usually has the latest of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so, it's kind of an aggregate, for like the New York Times, Washington Post and stuff, but they mm-hmm. basically just take, the latest and most, I don't know, not sensationalistic, but like the things that people really care about. And then they condense it and they give it a headline that makes like grabs your attention. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've seen people when I've posted Raw Story with all this fake news stuff, they say, oh, I don't trust this. You can trust Raw Story because they basically, they source everything. And it's always like a New York or a Washington Post that maybe is a 3,000 word article, and Raw Story will take it and just give you the highlights and the quick in and out for the short attention span people. But I go there to see what the headlines are.
So yeah, that's what I do too. And I it wasn't that way before the election.
Right.
You know, before the election, certainly in the primaries and wondering who was going to take it, Hillary or Bernie. And, you know, I was definitely paying attention to the news constantly.
Yeah.
Now I'm doing it in the hopes that something horrible happens to the Trump administration, you know, that they do something stupid and they get called on it. I'm just praying for this Russia smoking gun to come out.
I know, me too.
You know, and I believe that it's there. You know, but I'm tired of that. I want to, you know, we've been forced, I think, to operate as if good will come of this and all of our efforts and our marches and our resistance and all of that, as something good is going to come of it. But some days I just, you know, it's hard to shake it. And we've got to weather this storm. How many days do we have before the 2018 elections? Like, honestly, I look for the number and I go, okay, well, that's really only like, you know, in a year, we're going to be heavily campaigning for those. So like, I can do anything for a year.
Yeah.
I can stomach anything for a year.
I seem to be a little bit more optimistic about the 2018 elections, mainly because they're all so spread out. It's not just one person that we can all, you know, get divided on. It's, you know, you've got all these different people that are running and the Republicans are running scared. So I think that's a good sign.
I do too. I think the Republicans, you know, it's such a jacked up, the White House it's a joke. I'm sure you read the AP interview from beginning to end with your mouth agape.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going down the politics road.
No, we can talk about it.
I could only imagine Julie, I don't even remember what her last name is, but the woman that was doing the interviewing, there was an interaction between, she was talking about what kind of news do you watch? And he says he watches CNN. And then in the next sentence, he says he doesn't watch them anymore. And she goes, but wait a sec, you just said that you did. And he goes, what did I say? When did I say it? And you could just feel it. It was as if I was a fly on the freaking wall when I was reading the transcript, because the transcript doesn't lie.
Right.
And the man is a buffoon.
And that's a nice way to, you know, refer to him.
Well, I know. I love it, because you only refer to him as orange fuckface when you address him. You know, that's his term. Will Durst calls him a malignant clown, which was funny before the election.
Right.
Because we could laugh it off and say, yeah, bye-bye, malignant clown. And then, you know, a week later, we're all, you know, crapping our pants. But anyhow, what do you think, Kimberly? Do you think do you feel that impeachment is on the horizon?
I think so, but it really just depends. You know, I mean, I don't understand these Russia deniers, you know, especially I hate calling them burners because it brings it back to the primary, but still, the burner side wants to say, you know, Russia made me hate Hillary. Yeah, right. I mean, that's not what this is about. Take out the fake news part. Take out their, you know, attempt to smear Hillary. Okay. Just take that whole equation out. What I am concerned about is, first of all, they're Russian, the interference at all, because I think the much bigger picture, aside from what they did to divide the Democratic Party, is I think, and think they're doing it well, is installing Russian agents in our government. You know, look at Mike Flynn. Look at the shit that he's going through right now. So if they could get some people in our government to you know, and then they've got the clown as president, that I don't know what, you know, I mean, obviously it's just speculation. You've got all these dots that are connected, but you have the missing piece. The missing piece is, did Trump himself coordinate or collude with Russia to win? And do I think he did? I think there's a high likelihood, but you know, we don't know until we know. I know that there's a gentleman on Twitter whose name escapes me now, so I apologize to everybody for this, but he used to work in the Clinton administration or campaign or whatever it was, Bill Clinton. And so he's had a lot of experience in politics, and he said that he made a comment that a staffer, I think it was when Dianne Feinstein came out of that meeting where she got information about Russia, why her face looked so like sullen or whatever. And it was, the staffer said, was because she learned that there was collusion. If there is proof of collusion, then I would certainly hope that it comes out soon. But I know that they have to build a case and they have to make the case for it.
Right.
And as impatient as I am, I only want them to come out when they have the strong enough case to do that. Do I think it's going to lead to impeachment? I certainly hope so.
Well, that would.
Yeah, it would. And I think that, you know, I think that Republicans, the more Trump loses his base, which I think is starting to really happen, slowly, but it's happening. They have no use for him. He ripped them apart during the primaries. Nobody fucking likes Trump. Yeah. So they can fulfill their destructive agenda without him just fine. So they don't need him. But I think they're all afraid. And that's why they won't go up against him at this point. But if you get a smoking gun, you know, if there's some kind of, you know, caught on tape thing or caught on camera thing, if there's some absolute, he'll be out. So I don't know. But I'm waiting too. It's like, we're all just waiting and going, how's it going to go down?
Right. Well, I have a lawn sign in my yard that says Clinton Kane, and it's still there. And I jokingly said, I'm not taking it down until he's impeached. And I said that on, you know, the day after the election. But I look at it, it's getting a little weathered.
Yeah.
But, that shit's staying up and it's coming down. It's coming down. I mean, the first 100 days, does this not seem like the longest 100 days?
I know the first day felt like a long day. It's like every day is a million years. Oh yeah. My God. All right. Yes. Well, let's raise the conversation up a little bit.
Okay. Yes, I agree.
So I asked people on Facebook, it's funny. I asked if they would give us some non-political topics to talk about, and guess what I got? A whole bunch of political topics. But, I know that my crowd on my Facebook page loves they're all junkies like I am, but I kind of want to just go off into a little bit of a break. So somebody mentioned Erin Moran. She passed away of cancer, and fuckface Scott Baio, which I want to tell a little personal story about him, you know, said something about her dying of drugs, and then I guess the internet went batshit crazy on him, and he stole her focus. And so my Facebook friend suggested that we, you know, talk about her. And so before we talk about her, which I absolutely want to do, I would just like to say that when I was an actor, I was an extra on Diagnosis Murder, and he was one of the stars of the show. And I had a very pleasant experience on that show, with the exception of having to be in his presence, which we never had a scene together. I didn't talk to him. We didn't have to interact in any way. But he was in the makeup chair, and he was talking. And I have no idea what he was saying. But I remember just fucking hating him. I hated him. And it wasn't even political. I wasn't political back then. I don't believe he was even talking about politics. He was just being an arrogant jerk. And I just remember thinking, God, what a dick. And, you know, here we go. Of course, he's a Trump supporter. What a shock. But so I do think it's funny that Erin Moran's brother, he's so upset because I guess Erin or Scott Baio's wife called Aaron's Moran brother, or Aaron, I can't even say her name, Aaron Moran's brother, to apologize for what Scott Baio said. Scott didn't call. His wife called. So his brother goes and doubles down on social media, attacking Scott and saying that when Aaron went out with him for a very brief time, she broke up with him for two reasons. One, because he was, in quotes, a little woman. And two, he had a small penis.
Of course he does.
So we all know now that Scott Baio has a small penis. And
that's so petty of us to love that.
I know. But it serves him right.
Of course he does.
The reason I love it is because... wait, I just lost my train of thought. What was I saying?
They get small penis.
Oh, because whether or not it's true, you just know men hate hearing, like, they don't want anyone to say that about them in any kind of, like, maybe it's true because she went out with him and she would know. We'll never really know if it's true, but it's going to fucking eat him alive. And I love it. That's why I like it.
Exactly. And what kind of a prick piece of shit goes out there in the public and talks about someone with whom he was, a professional, she was his colleague, she was his girlfriend for a period. And what he says is she was an insecure human being. And if you do drugs and drink, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Like, he can't have any respect for this woman who has just died of cancer. Had he paid attention to find out. But the brother, not only did he voice the, you have a small dick and you're a little woman, but he went after him hard on Twitter.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
Yeah.
Pray you never run into me. Your wife calls, not you, you coward.
Yeah.
You piece of scumbag caca. Yeah. Well, I hate him. So
let's talk about Aaron though. I mean, you know, I it seems that she's getting lost in all of this anger with Scott Baio and everything. So, you know, I mean, all I can say is when I was young, Happy Days was one of my favorite television shows. I watched it. I think it was on Tuesday nights, if I'm not mistaken. It came on at 8 o'clock and it was like must see TV for me.
Yeah.
And, I just remember, I can't say that I had a specific love for Joni, but she was just one of the, you know, one of the group. I loved all of them. I remember watching that show and just feeling like it was, I don't know. It was so cool. I loved it. I loved that show. And I do remember there was an episode where she developed a crush on Potsy.
Dren.
is that what she called him?
Dren. It's nerd backwards.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I forgot about that.
They were at, the little burger joint.
Uh huh.
And what was it called?
Well, it was Al's. First it was Al's, no, Arnold's.
Arnold's.
And then it was Al's.
And then the dude owned it, Mr. Moriaki owned it. And then Al bought it. So she's sitting on a stool and Potsy was singing.
Uh-huh.
And he was focusing the song on her and she fell in love with him at that moment. And everybody called him a nerd. But so she called him Dren. I'm not mistaken. Wasn't she writing him love letters to Dren?
I think so.
Or that was a long time ago. Yeah. I've smoked a lot of weed since then. So I don't know if those facts are correct. But Joni was awesome. Joni was a staple. I mean, that show, we grew up to that. That was like my family sat around in the TV room and watched that every single week.
Yeah, me too.
And then
definitely
followed up Laverne and Shirley.
Yes, who I loved, Laverne and Shirley.
The best.
God, they were funny.
They were.
And they still hold up. They're just ridiculous. They were so funny. But I do remember that episode where she fell in love with him because I always kind of identified with that for some reason, like, you know, liking the, and I was just a little girl, so I had not yet encountered so many times like I did so many times as an adult, liking the guy that I could never have.
Oh my God, story of my life at that age. Joni was awesome. Joni could hang, which I always loved, because like you said, I never had this deep love for her necessarily.
Right.
But she was a kid when the show started. I remember that first episode. And then she blossomed into this gorgeous, young woman. And but she could always hang and hold her own, and I loved that about Joni.
Yeah.
And I'm sad, yeah. You know, as somebody who, you know, has been sober for a really long time. I mean, that could have been me, you know, going that route and ravaging myself and ending up in a, you know, not great circumstances and then getting sick. I mean, yeah. Awful.
It is awful. And it's awful that he's such a jerk about it. But, you know, he's
I'm
going
to impeach him. I can't stand that. He's such a tool. He's an overcompensator. And I guess we know why now.
Yes, because he has a small penis.
Vienna boy.
It's making Bob laugh.
I bet it's thin, too. I'm sorry. Okay, I didn't need to go there, but I did.
Let's see. Well, one of the subjects that I'm going to bring up, and I'll ask you what if you have one.
A small penis? No.
is one of my favorite artists, musical artists, that... people might make fun of me for, but they would just be stupid, if they did. But, you know, I like Neil Diamond. I love Neil Diamond. And some people think that he's, I don't know, like a lounge lizard type. Absolutely not. People don't even really realize that he's written so many hits for, other music stars. Like he wrote Red, Red Wine, done by UB40.
Yes.
There's a whole bunch of songs that he's written that, but he's just so awesome. I just love him so much. And I'm going to play some music from him in a bit when we move over to the end another thing segment. But do you have like somebody you don't apologize for loving, although you might get teased about it?
I would say for sure Neil Diamond, love. But there's a thing, you know, Barry Manilow is another one that is near and dear. And I will sing out Mandy and maybe even cry if given the opportunity to really get into it.
Yeah.
But I love him.
Me too.
I love him. And, you know, I've got other bands like poppy bands, I'm sure. But
like Air Supply is one I like.
Oh, yes. Love, love, love. And like, oh my God, doesn't that just bring back memories?
Yes. I love Air Supply. And I mean, I just, it's so funny to me because I can just imagine people are rolling their eyes right now. But I mean, I actually don't own an Air Supply CD or anything. I do own Neil Diamond. And I will listen to Neil Diamond. But, yeah, and there's, I have this live Neil Diamond that he does Cherry. And it's so much better than the recorded one. It's so cool. He's freaking awesome. And you know what? The reason I started really liking him in the first place was because I saw a VH1 Behind the Music with him back in the day. And he got a lot of crap for the outfits that he would wear. And so his whole take on it was, the more crap I get, the more I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to go for the wild and crazy, the tighter, the better. And yes. I loved that attitude. It was just like a fuck you attitude. I'm just going to do what I want to do. And I don't think it was something that was necessarily his fashion choices per se, but those fashion choices were kind of decided because people made fun of him. And so he's like, fine, I'll give you more.
and we're still gonna love you, baby.
And I love it. And then there's just also the idea that and what do you think about this? I mean, have you ever put any thought to this? I know I'm just kind of going all over the place here, but I'm 48 and you're what, 50? 51?
51, Mishy.
Well, I'll be 49 in July. So we're pretty much in the same generation. And I think that our generation was like the last generation to not grow up online, you know, and I think that we have something very unique there. And I've always felt, or at least since I've turned 30, that, I mean, I'm sorry, 40, that I really cherish my generation for that reason, because we know what it was like to, you know, as I'm going to steal this from one of my old best friends, you know, just go sit on a hill and play with two sticks.
Yeah.
And like have the best fun ever.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, or like make those, did you ever make those little flower necklaces from those white flowers that grow in the grass?
Yes, little daisy chains.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I just feel like there's something, because some people were saying on Facebook, you know, why don't you talk about the dumbing down of our culture, or, you know, talk something related to this. And so I just thought, well, you know, there's a lot that's really positive from the generations that grew up with computers.
Yes.
So I don't want to take away from that, and I don't want to bash them, but they just will never know. Like, I didn't have, we didn't have play dates. We just played.
Right. We got on our bikes at the age of 8 and said, I'm going to so-and-so's house.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, it's dark.
Yeah.
And then the cat, my dad would come out and like, you do a big whistle.
Yes.
That, come in.
Yes. Exactly.
And they don't know where the fuck we were.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, I remember when I was 9 years old, my mom moved me from Baltimore to Los Angeles, California, and we lived in Brentwood, which is like where O.J. Simpson, you know, the whole O.J. Simpson thing, that was my stomping grounds. And so there was San Vicente Boulevard, which was a pretty big street, and there were lots of different shops and restaurants. And I used to just go up there and walk around. I owned the neighborhood. I was friends. There was this man who lived up the street from me. He was this old man, and I can't, his name was Regis Toomey. He was an actor. And he was actually, I was doing a TV Guide, remember TV Guide? TV Guide crossword puzzle.
Oh, yeah.
And Regis Toomey was one of the answers. But he was this really nice old man, and I was friends with him. I remember there was this lady that lived in an apartment building close to where we lived, and she was older, like maybe 50s or 60s. I used to go to her house and sit and have tea with her and talk, and she would like give me cookies and stuff, and we would chat, and then I'd leave. And then, you know, and I just like owned that neighborhood. And kids these days, it's like, I can't even imagine. I would be so frightened if I had a kid right now to let them outside. I would be like so scared.
I'm telling you, I do, you know, my son's almost 13 and I let him now. It's about half a mile from our front door to College Avenue in Rockridge, where there's like bookstores and he can go get a hot chocolate or whatever. And I just started, you know, my husband goes, you know, why don't we let him go? Just run, let him walk home from so, you know, somewhere, mm-hmm. drop him off and let him go. And I'm like, no, how I do it. He loves that freedom.
Yeah.
And he'll go down alone with, you know, $5 and go get a hot chocolate and go, you know, try to sell books at a bookstore and walk on back. And I'm like, damn it. That's life. Do it.
Is.
Enjoy.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I did that in Moscow when I was, my dad worked for ABC News and I lived in Russia. I used to take the bus to school by myself. And,
what?
I mean, in fact, because I was a correspondent or the correspondent's daughter. So there were the diplomats and the correspondents. Diplomats' kids got to use a school bus and I was so jealous, which now I'm really glad I had the authentic experience, but I had to take an actual Russian bus. And because I had more of an authentic experience, I knew my way around a little bit. And one day I organized an outing with my girlfriends and we were 12. And so we all went, our parents dropped us off or whatever at the one location. And then we just ourselves, because I knew how to navigate my way through the city and taxis and everything, we went to Gorky Park and we hung out. It was like three or four of us and we all just hung out. Just like 12-year-olds in Russia.
Yeah, unbelievable.
But that freedom, exactly. That's what it is. I remember being so proud of myself for knowing enough Russian. I mean, that was back in the communist days. It was a police state, so it was fairly safe. But you know, I mean, to be able to just go out on your own and run around, it's an amazing feeling when you're a kid.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, I had that feeling from a really young age.
Yeah.
But, and I want to give that to my kids and I want them to feel safe and I want them to take precaution and know that they live in a pretty urban environment, but they also need to know how to get through, you know, neighborhoods and situations too. So I'm going to let them out.
Yeah.
Letting them out.
I guess we should, start wrapping this up and go into the next segment, which is for subscribers only.
Okay.
But I wanted to say this, that all of our listeners can support the show by becoming monthly subscribers at patreon.com/startmeup. So you can pledge anything you want, whether it's $1 a month or $5 a month, but $5 gets you access to And Another Thing, which is what we're going to do next. And as I have said before, the $10 pledge, which is on the site if you read it, gets you access to a free bonus show. There will be one this Saturday with Bob Seska and me. I don't know if we're going to keep that up. But you don't have to pledge any particular amount. You can do anything you want. So anything. So, and for anybody wondering, this song is called what, Bob?
Delirious Love
by Neil Diamond. It's awesome. And we'll see you and another thing in a second.
Being you being spent on delirious love.